You said this was one of the lighter planes during this time. Did that give you a speed advantage over speed?
Mostly in climb. It's not really in out-and-out speed, but mostly in climb. What the designers and what the Navy was looking for, especially when the kamikazes started, was an airplane that could get up to altitude and intercept them as fast as humanly possible. And so that's what the lightness got with this airplane. They could get up really fast. When I take off, I see 3,500 feet a minute for a long, long time. It's you know, there's a two-stage supercharger in it, but I don't use it. It's one of those deals where if you don't use it all the time, it goes south on you. And the engine guys say just leave it alone. I hardly ever fly it above 10,000 feet anyway, so I don't use it.
Painted for observation. Is that a pod underneath for a camera?
No, that's just where the fuel sump comes out. And the white one back there is just an old ADF. I don't think they ever did. It was just, you know, it carried guns, rockets, bombs, all of that stuff, but they never tried radar or anything, as far as I know.
How many other flyable Wildcats are there right now?
You know, I think there's maybe 10, something like that, in the United States, maybe 15 worldwide. I think I heard yesterday there's one of the F4F versions, you know, the stiff-winged with the Pratt engine in it, which would be very rare. But I think there's only 10 or 15. There's a guy down in Texas that's rebuilding two, and, you know, they kind of come and go. But not many.
The F4F with a Pratt engine used to belong to a fellow in Aurora, not too far from here.
Yeah, Dick Hansen had
Dick
one.
Dick Hansen. And it didn't fold, you know, it had hard wings.
Right. That's very rare.
Yeah.
Very rare.
They dug it out of Lake Michigan.
Right. Sir.
I know, I'm going to be a pain. Did you say you had a locking tailwheel on that?
Yes, sir.
You do have?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yeah. And interestingly, when they landed on the boat, they left it unlocked.
They left it unlocked?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I do that in a DC-3, goodbye.
Yeah. The Brits, the flaps are kind of interesting. They're vacuum operated. There's a tube that comes off the bottom of the carburetor. And then there's an accumulator in the aft section. And you get up or down. That's it. There's no intermediates. Well, the Brits wanted about 10 degrees of flaps for takeoff. And so they made wooden wedges. And they would pull the flaps down and put the wedges in, take off with the wedges in, and then once they were flying, they'd select full flaps, the wedges would fall off, and out they'd go. So the Brits were always screwing around with stuff.
Did you ever fly one that has a Curtis Electric prop on it?
This had the Curtis Electric when I got it. It was okay. It started to get real slow in the wintertime when I was flying. And the other wonderful thing about it is the minute you started, it coated the windscreen with grease and oil.
Grease and oil, yeah.
And so one of the happiest days of my life was when I took it off and put the ham standard. That ham standard is just, it's a work of art. I mean, if you look at that prop, it's just the most beautiful thing. And it holds RPM probably within 10 RPM, you know, no matter what I do. I just love that prop. It's clean.
Well, with the Curtis Electric, don't you have a huge battery in the back as well?
No. Well, I have a huge battery in the back. I don't know what they did in the day, but I never had too much trouble with it, but there's hardly any parts, and there's nobody that works on them anymore. So I still have it, and it's not as authentic, although the export versions of the Wildcat weren't allowed to leave the country with the Curtis Electric. They all had ham standards. So, you know, go figure. It's still kind of authentic.
How many minutes or seconds would a load of machine gun ammunition last in this airplane?
Boy, I can't tell you. I know that our guys, when the development versions of the F4F came out, they had folding wings and they went to 6 guns. And that was because the Brits wanted 6 guns. Our guys were very unhappy about that because it made an already underperforming airplane even heavier. And the other thing they were really unhappy about was that they couldn't carry nearly as much ammunition. And so it went from being okay to being really not very good at all when they went to the six-gun configuration. And it wasn't very long, even in the best of times. The other interesting thing to me, anyway, about the guns is that, and they're keeping it simple, and the guys had handles to cock the guns inside, and they were basically just cables that ran out to the guns. It wasn't electric or anything like that. It'd pull up on the handles, and that's how they cocked them. Another interesting thing is in training, in the pre-war days when things were really tight for the Navy, they only, when they went out to shoot at targets, at sleeves or whatever, they'd only give them about 12 rounds. And how everyone says now you train like you fight and you fight like you train. Well, they trained with 12 rounds. They found out when they filled the trays up to actually go fight, if they pulled any negative, they'd get a jam. And our guys were not happy about that. You know, they'd be in the fight and have a full load of ammunition and couldn't shoot.
You know, if you're at altitude and you got a problem, how do you get out?
You have to slide the canopy back, and although you can make it disappear. I mean, but basically it's going to slide back and either go off the airplane or just be in its position. But then you jump out, that's it. Well, you could roll it over. You know, it kind of would depend on what's going on. I hope I never have to figure that out.
Thinking about it.
I think about it all the time. I'm one of those guys, you know, you see the guys that get in and put the straps around them when they get in. If you talk to any parachute guy, he will tell you that is the wrong thing to do. You stand up, you put the parachute on, you get in the airplane, and then you do the same thing when you get out. That way it's programmed. You know, the last thing you want to do is take off the wrong straps when you're trying to get out for real, right? So, you know, you guys that are like my brother, lazy, you know, don't do that. That's dumb.
What was the highest weight in bombs that an F4F Wildcat or an FM2 could carry?
I think they could carry... that's a good question. I'm not sure I really know. I think it could carry a 500-pound bomb maybe in the middle and then maybe 100 pounds on the wings. I don't really know, to tell you the truth.
What's VSO on the airplane?
Two, huh? Okay, gentleman here says it carried two 500-pound bombs for when they were submarine patrol at the Atlantic, mostly.
What is power off stall speed in the landing configuration?
The airplane is very stable at 80 knots. You know, it's got to have good manners around the boat, so they made it so it would fly very nicely at 80 knots. The other day I was flying it and screwing around, and at altitude, I got it down in clean configuration, down to 65 indicated, and I was still able to make 360-degree circles at that. So it's pretty low. And at 80 knots, it's just as stable as can be. The go-around in this airplane is dead simple, I think, because the flaps are vacuum-operated. If there's a big air load, they won't come out all the way. And if you have a lot of power on, you know, the vacuum goes away. So when I go around, and I've had to do it four or five times for real, all I do is push it up to 30 inches. I've got the prop set at 1900 RPM. I push it up to 30 inches, rotate. I don't touch the gear. Don't touch the flaps. As the vacuum goes away and the speed builds, the flaps kind of come up by themselves. I get back up to pattern altitude, slow down again, reduce throttle, the flaps come back out, I come in and land. It's a non-event, and you don't need huge amounts of power to do it. You know, hardly any right foot for that. You know, it's really benign. Now, in the day, you know, if the guys were full of fuel and bombs and all of that, it wouldn't have been that simple. But... you know, this is really quite nice. When you take off in it, the stick is all the way in the right corner, and your right foot is just buried, and it stays that way until you've got the gear up, pretty much.
So does that mean there's essentially no VFE for this plane because it doesn't matter? They just won't come down. Flap extension speed.
No, you're right. Yeah, it doesn't matter. The gear. You know what I do is. Get the flaps out someplace around 160, 150 knots. You don't even have to reduce power. The speed comes off pretty nicely. The minute I have the gear down and have looked at it, I select full flaps. It's kind of interesting because they aren't locked together, and they come down like that, and it rocks a little bit. And then, you know, you can, there's indicators on the wing how far they're out. You know, they're just split flaps. So, and you just kind of watch, and they, you know, I turn final, and, oh, they're all the way down. That's cool. I've had to do, my friend Greg Morris has had to do a couple no-flat landings, which aren't much fun. It's no big deal, really, except it's really, really flat and uncomfortable.
Can you tell me what the horizontal thin white stripe on the tail is for?
You know, it was a squadron marking, and if my son was here, he could tell you. I can't.
The windshield apparently is thicker to withstand pressures. I wonder if that is designed for speed of a dive, or is there any armor protection in that windshield for flak or anything?
Yeah, the windshield is for armor. It's so that it doesn't. It's supposed to be able to take a 50 caliber, I think. But that's the only armor that's left on the airplane.
The pneumatic-operated flaps that were hooked up to the CARB is the vacuum source. Would they ever cause any problems with engine power if there was a leak somewhere, or would mess up your vacuum in the carburetor?
You know, if there does get to be a leak, it's going to be a problem. I haven't experienced it yet. And when you select, if you're very sensitive to it, when you select full flaps, you can feel a little bit of the burble in the engine, you know, when there's essentially a vacuum leak. But it's not a big deal. Hasn't been. I don't know if they've got a check valve in the system someplace, you know, if something really let go. But, yeah, it would be a problem.
I wonder if I might ask what the insured value is of a Wildcat these days.
It's just about what I can afford. Almost. I don't insure the hull, which is very expensive, with a 10% deductible, because I figure if I crash it, I won't need it.
Just carry more life insurance, right?
Yeah. Well, my wife would like that.
All right. Do you know the positive and negative G limits on the plane? And do you know how many, like the maximum Gs you've pulled yourself in it?
I think it's good for 8 or 9 Gs. And that's from reading the book. I probably only pull 3.5 or 4 Gs. You know, it was built in 1944. And even though it's only probably got 500 or 600 hours on it. It is not an acrobatic airplane. Right. It is not like an extra. The acro I do, the demonstration I do, is warbird aerobatics. You know, they aren't round loops. You won't see anything negative. I don't pull it that hard. Don't need to.
The short wings keep the G loads down too.
Yeah, although I've never, you know how you pull in a T6 or something like that, yeah, and you can feel it getting ready to go. I've never really felt that in this thing.
Good.
If I go home, all they're flying today, I think, is jets, right?
Yeah, today's jet day.
It's going to be boring because it's just jets.
They don't even know what to do with their feet.
No, and it's air conditioned. What's up with that?
Are those mechanical cowl flaps?
Yes, sir. Uh-huh. Yeah, there's a crank on the dash.
And
it's a crank. Yep. Yeah. And usually that's about the last thing I do. I take off, get to switch hands, get you take your hands off the throttle, which is a little worrisome. Hold the stick with your left hand, crank with your right, and all the time you're keeping it below 100 knots, so you're going up like that. And then once I get the gear all the way up, I pull the prop back to 24, 23, something like that, reduce power. If I'm going someplace or not screwing around, then I'll pull it all the way back to 30 inches, and then I can go to auto lean, and then you trim it out, take a look at the cylinder head temp and the oil temp, and then probably crank the cowl flaps closed, and that's the last time you have to mess with them. They really slow it down. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Yes, sir. It
it's a lot easier
down.
Going down, isn't it?
It's a lot easier going down. That's where you really don't dare let go. You know, there's all kinds of stories in the day of guys that let go, and then all they could think of to do was put their knee in the way, and they broke kneecaps and did all kinds of crazy stuff. So, man, once you start cranking, you're committed. It's not that big a deal. I've got three of them a day in me anyway.
This is just to remind everybody that this is really a transition airplane. This was originally built with two wings, the F3F.
Right.
And it had a biplane, and then they decided nobody was going to buy biplanes anymore, so they put the wing, and they put it right in the middle of the fuselage.
Right. To someone's question about why this airplane is so good for me, this was designed when everyone thought the important thing for a fighter to be was maneuverable. They thought the thing had to turn and climb and be really maneuverable. Well, what we found out was what was really important was out-and-out speed, the ability to carry armament, and fuel for range. So this airplane was built to fly, you know, to be really what I think is a lot of fun to fly. I've talked to guys who fly the Hellcat, and they say it's boring. You know, it isn't responsive like this. This is kind of like a Pitts in a lot of ways. Sir.
Maybe discuss a little bit some of the differences in how the British would operate the aircraft as the Martlet versus the U.S. with flap usage and some things
like
that.
Well, I talked about that a little bit. I talked about how they use the wedges. Okay. And, I already did that. There's a great picture in one of the Wildcat books of that test pilot. I can't remember his name. But he's flying a Wildcat inverted, and he's got a Wildcat on either wing. I mean, that's the kind of thing the Brits did. And, of course, there's no inverted system. I can tell you, when you go just a little bit negative, the oil pressure goes away really fast. And so they were just nuts. They still are.
But they have fun.
They do. It's a weird thing, isn't it? I mean, they seem so nice and everything, but you put them in a car or an airplane, they just go crazy.
They really do. Nicely so. Any other questions?
Down.
31.
Well, the book says 28 or 29 or 31. I've never counted. So I really couldn't tell you. I'm thinking about other stuff.
Do you unload it a little bit on takeoff?
No.
Some people do to get the stress off the chain.
I don't want to get the airspeed, and I want altitude. You know, I'm going for that.
Everybody has a little different technique.
Right.
We do have a Wildcat that races at Reno.
Yes.
Yeah, I think they cheat.
I do too.
But you have to get 300 miles an hour to qualify. And it's usually 300.6 is what he uses.
But everybody loves to see it fly.
Well, they
so
do.
They make kind of an exception for
one,
it.
One year he was flying, he would cut across the middle of the course.
Yeah.
get ahead of everybody. What difference? They give you a penalty, so what?
Yeah.
Any other questions? Yeah.
No, most likely it will break something in the structure here, and you know, one gear will be completely broken. That's what happened to Greg. You know, it was kind of leaning back like that. Now, the good thing is, Grumman Ironworks, you're probably not going to hurt yourself. You know, you can probably belly it in, and the airplane is going to save your ass because it's just built so high. I mean, if nothing else, look how far you are from the ground. Now, I am sitting on 126 gallons of fuel. But it's actually protected by a lot of structure. So,
question over here, yes?
Yeah, what was that you were saying about the Brits?
I said I really like them.
But they're crazy.
But you put them in a car or an airplane and they go nuts. and Bill said in a good way.
Yeah, very good way.
Yeah.
Did you ever know Dick Foote?
I didn't. I had never had the privilege of meeting him.
Dick Foote used to be a Warbird member. He's gone now. But he was the production test pilot for Grumman. And he flew almost every Wildcat built.
Right.
He used to come to Oshkosh. He had a gear problem. Could not, you know, the chain broke. But he had a true skeg underneath it that was for the catapult.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And he landed it down in Fond du Lac on the skeg. And all he got was a prop blade.
Yeah.
It just, you know, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
It's the simpler the airplanes, the better they survive things like that, frankly.
Right.
I think. Anything else we'd like to cover? We have, this afternoon, we're doing a Corsairs, which really was one of the ultimate World War II Navy airplanes.
Well, this was actually.
Well, late in the war, it was one. Okay. It's I want to tell you how much we appreciate you guys coming. I hope you enjoy
right.
Warbirds in Review.
So if you ever get to
Connie
Washington,
Boland started
D.C.
this about 7 years ago, as
holler.
I said. Okay. She's and done a great job. Makes it fun for those of us strong. Who get to talk about things we know nothing about. And so, anyway, thank you very much for coming. Well, Mike, thank you very much. Appreciate your talking. Appreciate you bringing the airplane.